Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 132, entitled, How to Use Hypnosis, Stoicism, NLP, and Meditation to Have a Happier Life, I chat with Benjamin Scheffler. Benjamin Scheffler is a medical hypnotist and blogger, and in today's episode, he talks about how to implement tools like hypnosis, meditation, NLP, and stoicism into your life. He shows us how to master your mind, overcome your fears, and enjoy living in the present moment. If you're wondering how to get control of your mind today and live a happier life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. All right, I'm excited to finally say that the Elite Life Nutrition brand is just about ready to be available to you guys. So give me 1 week from now and I will have an exact date, an exact location, and an exact time for you to pick up the first product from the Elite Life Nutrition supplement line, and that is magnesium citrate, the best magnesium on the market. Magnesium is used in over 300 functions within the body, and actually a fun fact, about 80% of Americans are deficient in magnesium, and a lot of other countries have similar stats as well. So if you're listening to this podcast, it's actually very likely that you have low magnesium. You'd probably do well to supplement with it, but Elite Life Nutrition, our brand, is the official sponsor of the Elite Man Podcast, and it is the best brand on the market. It took us a while, trust me, a lot longer than I wanted to, but it took us a while to formulate this product, to find the right manufacturers, to find the best manufacturers in the country, but we were able to do it. We were able to put it all together, and we had a couple extra hurdles we had to jump through, but it's finally going to be ready in about a week or so. So in next week's podcast, I will have an exact time, date, and location for you to pick it up. But until then, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com if you haven't already yet, and sign up for the newsletter to get more info and promotions and deals, discounts, all that jazz, and be on the forefront for all the news and updates for Elite Life Nutrition going forward. Again, that's EliteLifeNutrition.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and also next week, make sure you tune in to get an exact date, time, and location to pick up the first product on the Elite Life Nutrition line. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Benjamin Scheffler from BrilliantSide.com. Benjamin, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm really actually super excited to be here today.
Yeah, man, I checked out some of your work the other day, and just, you know, like I mentioned to you before we went on air, it's like totally up my realm, and, you know, all the self-help, hypnosis stuff, man, I love all those topics, and you're, I think, a perfect fit for today's episode, so I'm really excited to bring you on.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to talk to people that either have no experience with hypnosis, or sounds like you have some experience with hypnosis yourself. Like, we don't have to talk about that right now if you don't want, but I want to hear about it eventually, so.
Yeah. Actually, man, yeah, we'll start with that. I mean, my whole background in hypnosis is really pivotal in sort of my whole progress in becoming the man I am today, I guess you could say. I had a lot of problems years ago, almost a decade ago now, with anxiety, with depression, panic attacks. Anybody who knows me well or listens to the podcast frequently knows kind of the story, but hypnosis was really critical in helping me overcome some of those areas. I followed guys like Dr. Andrew Dobson, Paul McKenna, and use hypnosis regularly, like every single day in a really tough period of my life, and it literally helped me overcome some of these major obstacles in my life, like depression. And, you know, I was so depressed one time at one point in my life where I was having suicidal thoughts all the time. I was getting panic attacks 3 to 4 times a week. It was really that bad, and hypnosis was really that powerful in helping me overcome that. So I talk about it. It's one of the most powerful tools I think we have as humans, and I think so many people don't know about it. And so many people don't know how to really implement it into their lives. So when I get to talk to someone like you who understands it, it's just really refreshing. And I think, you know, that has to be spoken about even more.
Yeah. And I've heard very similar stories throughout my career. Like, almost all of the teachers that have taught me different, like, hypnosis strategies or psychology strategies, stuff like that, usually they've gotten into the hypnosis field because at one point they went to a hypnotist themselves, and it was so powerful for them that they got intrigued, and then they just started that as a career. I feel like I'm the only one that I really know of that I didn't see a hypnotist first. I was just really fascinated about the brain, and so and hypnosis seemed kind of magical and like very mysterious, and so I just started researching like crazy and found some mentors, eventually went to school with it. So that's kind of my background with hypnosis. I'm just absolutely fascinated with how the brain works, and I've seen kind of what you've experienced, like people that have had constant anxiety attacks or panic attacks or are complete like recluses because of social anxiety. And hypnosis can change things really quickly because it's just something different that not a lot of people do.
Yeah. So what is your background specifically, Benjamin? Like you sort of touched on it a minute ago, like you got into hypnosis. But when people ask you kind of what it is you do, what do you tell them, and how did you specifically get into that?
Yeah, so I'm a medical hypnotist, and that means that I'm certified with IMDHA, which is the International Medical and Dental Hypnotherapy Association, which is a mouthful. But basically, that is just a certifying board that kind of specializes in the medical side of hypnosis, because the reason I got into hypnosis is I was about 10 years ago or so. Well, I'm getting older. I was working at Google at the time as like a contractor, and I heard a radio show that had a hypnotist on it, and that particular hypnotist was from Australia, and he said that he helped people with quality of life and pain management, like cancer patients and burn victims. And when I first heard that, I was super blown away. Like, I thought hypnosis was fake, or that people were just sort of going along with it. I didn't realize you could do real things with hypnosis. And so after that radio show I listened to, I bought as many books as I could. I eventually found some really great mentors in the Bay Area, California, where I lived. And then I eventually went to school for it. I went to two different schools in Southern California. And then about 5 years ago, I moved up to Boise, Idaho, and I started my private practice, where I've been I at first focused on helping people with chronic pain. Like, that was the reason I got into hypnosis, and it was really satisfying for me. But over the years, I eventually shifted to anxiety, because anxiety was something that could be just as crippling, even more so than chronic pain. And I saw such drastic results when hypnosis was applied to different things like social anxiety or panic attacks or crises of confidence, whatever it might be. Hypnosis could drastically change things really quickly. So I guess that's where my background is in private practice and helping people with hypnosis that way. But over the past couple of years, I started a website, brilliantside.com, and then I've recently launched a podcast, which is called Shut Up Brain, because everyone's told their brain to shut up. So that's how I want to start helping people that way. So I can kind of spread the message, spread some of these tools a little bit further, which is why it's cool that there's people like yourself out there that are in kind of these different areas and are also saying, hey, you can use these different strategies to become a better person or a better man. I think that is really cool and really needed in this day and age.
Yeah, for sure, man. So Benjamin, can you just quickly talk about what hypnosis can actually be used for? Like, what in like all practicality, what is like the day-to-day uses for? What do you use it mostly for? What can it be applied to? And what are some of the things that it doesn't work for? Like, what are some of the limitations that, you know, you hear about hypnosis, or people tell you things like, you know, about hypnosis, maybe like stage hypnosis type things, or like grow taller, you know, like you see programs online to help. And as much as I hate to admit this, man, I think I was like 15 or 16 years old, that was one of the first things I saw online, and I actually got some program to help you grow taller. didn't do a fucking thing. but that's like some of the limitations, that's some of the far-fetched things with hypnosis. But can you talk about what it actually is useful for, and what are some of the sort of the misconceptions out there about it?
Yeah, and this is what I ran into at first, too. When I first discovered hypnosis, I went online and I found all this stuff claiming that hypnosis could do all these crazy things. And I was like, holy shit, I don't know if, like, this is real or not. And so that's why it took me so long before I actually went to a formal school, because for the first year, I was like, I don't know if this is, like, snake oil or not. But yeah. So I'm going to tell you what it can actually do. Someone that has been in the trenches, has been doing hypnosis for years, what it can actually do and what it can't do. So like I said, I got into this for chronic pain, and I've seen people drastically reduce their pain. People that have come to me with different disorders, back pains from horrible surgeries that have gone wrong, people with endometriosis, people with, I mean, all sorts of different chronic pain issues. And you can actively reduce it, or chronic pain and also acute pain, sorry. And so I've seen it being reduced from, like, if 10 is the most pain you're experiencing, a lot of people come into my office at like an 8 or 9, and I've seen it be reduced to like a 3 or a 2, which can be very significant. It can be the difference from lying in your bed all day in pain to actually being able to get up and play with your kids.
So Benjamin, let me just interject for 1 minute, man. Sorry.
Yeah.
With like this whole opioid epidemic going on, especially in the United States, how easy is it for most people to reduce their pain to like such a level, like from a 10 to 2? I mean, you see so many people taking Oxycontin and Percocets and all those types of things. Could this be applied mainstream to help, like, you know, most 90%+ of patients that are on these types of painkillers? Is this an actual, like, practical use of hypnosis?
It is practical. But the thing about pain control in hypnosis is that's the one area I found that there's a little bit of a talent to it. Some people are just really good at masking pain and getting rid of their own pain. Other people are not great at it for whatever reason. And for some reason, pain is that one area. So I'll give you just some anecdotal kind of percentages. If someone comes into me with pain of some sort, there's a 60% chance that I should be able to help them reduce it in some way. Now, I might help them reduce it 10%, or it might be 90%, but they should get some sort of reduction. That means that there's about 40% that don't get any change. They might reduce their stress, they might reduce their anxiety, but they don't reduce the physical symptoms of pain. Now, that is specifically when I'm talking about pain. When it comes to other things like anxiety or craving control or changing habits or behaviors, there's a much higher percentage of success. It's usually around 90% if you know what you're doing. So pain is, there's no magic bullet when it comes to pain. Pain is so tricky, and it's very individual to people who have the same disease or same problem going on. They will experience that pain very differently. I mean, you can just talk to two different mothers. One mother will say, oh yeah, the birth was not that bad at all. Or another mother might say, man, the birth was the worst thing ever. I'm never having another kid. So pain is very, very subjective.
Okay, cool. And just to, I guess, follow up on that too, when you're doing the hypnosis on pain, is it something that's like you said, is it masking it where it's more of like a mindset and you kind of shut it out? Or is it literally like you're speaking to the subconscious mind and having like different chemicals flow to the, you know, like, because your body has all these types of chemicals, has like thousands and thousands of chemicals in its system and able to, like, you know, use it at any given moment. Are you literally speaking to the subconscious mind and activating those chemicals to like have those natural painkillers shoot to different areas of the body? Or is it more of like a masking type of thing and a mindset?
It's sort of both. So when it comes to pain, there's really two parts of pain. There is the sensation, and then there's the suffering. The sensation is where if you cut your hand or something like that, the sensation is the nerve endings going from the site of injury all the way up your arm and sending that signal to your brain. And the suffering is how your brain interprets that signal. 'Cause we've all had that experience where we've been playing around as a kid or as an adult, and you look down and you cut your knee and you didn't even realize it. You're bleeding. You're like, how'd this even happen? And that's because your brain was so busy doing something else fun that even though your body sent the signal of the pain, it didn't process it in a way that was painful. In fact, it just simply ignored it. So I guess the kind of long roundabout way to answer your question is, it is releasing some chemicals and stuff like that too, which can actively reduce pain. But by applying different strategies like mindfulness and different NLP techniques, like neuro-linguistic programming techniques, you can actually change how you experience that pain. So sometimes the pain isn't necessarily reduced, but the suffering is gone, or at least the suffering part has reduced. I know that's a kind of weird way to describe it, but the thing is, when it comes to hypnosis and the brain and pain and really everything like that, science still has a lot more to learn. Mm-hmm. And as we're developing new techniques of scanning the brain and measuring things, we're learning more and more, but there's a lot of unknowns in this field, which I find to be fascinating.
Yeah, no, totally, man. I just think this is, you know, one of the most fascinating topics out there. And like you said, it's, you know, totally, it's the mindset thing, and I 100% get that. I think it's the other part which actually might be even more fascinating, and the applications of hypnosis could be even, like, in the future, you know, if it's even possible to do this. But if it would be possible, I mean, that could literally change so many different things. Like, if you could literally speak to the subconscious mind and tell it, like, what to do, like, yeah, send these painkillers, these natural painkillers in your body, or send this chemical here, or send that one there, and, you know, fix these different types of illnesses or pains or whatever, diseases. You know what I mean, Benjamin? I mean, that's that would be something else.
that would be awesome. And, you know, things are constantly being developed. The hypnosis that was taught 10 years ago is different than the hypnosis now, at least the people that are keeping up with the field. And a lot of the stuff being taught now is incorporating a lot of neuroscience and, like, how the body works. I mean, they just released Stanford just released a study about hypnosis and different areas of the brain just recently that they just discovered. So, I mean, things are always happening in this field, which is, it makes it really cool to be in this field because things are always changing, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I mean, that was kind of, you know, I cut you off there for a minute, but I know we were kind of in the middle of that first question, which was, what are some of the other applications of it that it can do, and then the things that it, like, totally just doesn't work for right now anyways?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me of that. So what it can do and what it's really good at is anything that involves mindset or perspective. That's why it's really good for things like anxiety or habit control, addictions, craving control, things like pain control, sports performance. You know, I was just working with a professional golfer just a couple weeks ago. It's really good at helping with focus. So it's really good with all those things. The things that it's not great at are things that, like, are physically changing your body, like getting taller or, like, getting bigger boobs or whatever it might be. If it comes to or growing hair, I don't think it can do that. I've not seen the evidence for that. Although, you know, there's some interesting things. There's some gray areas. Like, for example, when it comes to things like allergies, you know, allergies are an immune response, and you can affect an immune response using the subconscious mind. It's not a 100% silver bullet sort of thing, but there's some influence there. And so I think that's why all of these different kind of scammy snake oil hypnosis products pop up, because, you know, there is a gray area, and depending on what you want to solve, it might be able to be affected with hypnosis. You know, I've tended to stick towards things that are around mindset and beliefs, because I feel like those are the most pertinent problems, at least for me. So,
yeah, no, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, man. And you're right. From what I've seen the research out there, it seems to be like there are some things where, as far as, like, you know, boosting your immune system goes, or maybe increasing your energy, or, like, things like that, where there kind of is a gray area, that there's some research that says it works, and then others that kind of say it doesn't work. I think overall, though, it has to be, you know, studied a lot more. And then, of course, like we just talked about a minute ago, like, who knows where this could go in a few years, you know, 10, 20, even 100 years from now, like, where they're going to be with the whole hypnosis thing, and the and even just technology and stuff. You can study it, you can pinpoint different things, you can understand the brain much better. I think, you know, going forward, there's just going to be so many different more applications for it, and such a better understanding about how it all works.
Yeah, I think that there's some really interesting anecdotal cases of people where their minds have really affected their life. Like there was this one story of this person with multiple personality disorders where in one personality, when that personality was primary, I think they had diabetes or something like that. And then in their other personality, it was just gone. And, you know, and so the mind can create kind of negative things and sicknesses in the body. And so you could infer from that, well, if it can create it, it can also get rid of it as well. And I've seen some of that in hypnosis, but like I said, there is no magic bullet out there. Hypnosis is just kind of one tool. It can be a really powerful tool, and it could be the right solution for the job, but it's just a hammer, and it's in your toolbox, I guess. There's lots of tools out there.
Yeah, it just reminded me, too, of that movie Split, I think it was called, Split, a couple months ago that came out. Mm-hmm. Really cool, fascinating movie where this guy had like 20 different personalities and just, you know, he was like an old lady, I think, in one, and he was like a little boy, like a 5-year-old boy or something in another one. Oh. And then there was like this beast one that came out in the end where he was like this, you know, wicked, crazy, like, I think he was even some kind of animal or demon or whatever, and he was like climb the walls and everything. But it was like, you know, it's a cool movie if anyone listening wants to check it out. But it was like he had all these like, you know, split personalities, and like he would become this different person, and it was like he looked the same on the surface, but like all his like mannerisms and characteristics and the way he talked, and you know, mm-hmm. like even you said, maybe like his, you know, diabetes, if he had like these different conditions and stuff, I feel like they would have translated into, I don't know, that different personality. But we digress often. That's okay. on the show, as you can tell. But so today I actually wanted to cover the topic of how to overcome your fear of death, and using some of the techniques and skills you're familiar with, the hypnosis, the NLP, the meditation, that kind of stuff. You've kind of worked, and also your martial arts background. I understand you're is it an MMA fighter?
I've gone to different MMA gyms. I trained in one for a couple years. Now I mainly do Krav Maga, which is an Israeli martial art. They teach like military and law enforcement and stuff. But I've done all sorts of different martial arts: jiu-jitsu, boxing, Kyokushinkai, Taekwondo, like lots of different stuff. So, cool.
Badass stuff like that.
Yeah, so I guess when it comes to the fear of death, the reason that I have kind of overcome it is because in my late teens and early 20s, like, I was terrified of dying. I think everyone goes to that point where, I don't know, something happens and you realize you're going to die and that everyone around you is going to die. And that is a heavy, very horrifying thought. And the very first way I tried to solve it is I turned to religion. I was raised Catholic, so I just got super into the Catholic religion. I was like praying the rosary like every night, praying as much as I could, all sorts of different stuff like that. And eventually I just realized that that was not the way to solve this problem. And I don't know how I came across it, but I came across this book called The Hagakure, which is written by a samurai at the time when samurai were becoming extinct. So this particular samurai, he didn't actually get a chance to fight in battles or anything like that. So what he concentrated on is being the best samurai he could without being able to demonstrate that through violence. And so he really focused on the samurai mindset and dressing well and how to carry yourself in a normal day-to-day life as a man of honor. And so I got really into samurai and the Bushido. And one of the things that he talked about in that book was meditating on death, and that a samurai is going to face death probably multiple times throughout their life. And in order not to be paralyzed by that fear, they should meditate on death, meditate on being torn apart by arrows or sliced with swords or shaken to death by an earthquake or ravaged by disease or drowning in a tsunami. Just imagine all sorts of different ways that you can die. And so I was like, okay, I want to overcome my fear of death, so I'm going to start doing this death meditation. And so I sat down and every day for about 6 months or so, I meditated on death. I imagined myself being cut up by samurai or shot or whatever it might be. And at first it was really disturbing, and it was not very fun to do. But eventually, I became so much more comfortable with the idea. And this really, it gained momentum, especially when I started to discover things like Zen and ideas like Stoicism, with it, which is another type of philosophy, and how to live a really good life. And so after conquering that fear, and I don't really have a step-by-step way on how exactly I did it besides doing this death meditation and facing it as much as I could, and then focusing on living in the present moment every day. And so now I'm curious about death. I don't fear death. I have all sorts of different beliefs on what might happen when you die, but I'm comfortable with something cool happening or nothing happening. And that gives me a lot of resources to be courageous in my normal life, because the worst thing that could happen is death, I guess. And that's not that bad. I've faced that in my life, and it's a process that happens to get over that fear, but it's one that can be accomplished. And I don't know if you've done any sort of research about the samurai Bushido. Sounds like something that would be up your alley, though, wouldn't it be, Justin?
Yeah, I haven't done any research on it, but I've heard it, you know, from multiple guys over the years here and there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the other reason that I was kind of into the Bushido and samurai is because I've been into the martial arts most of my life. And that would be one thing that I'd recommend to most men out there if you wanted to become better in some way. Because what I did is I went to a few different martial arts schools, but then eventually I found two friends. One was really good at boxing. The other was really good at jiu-jitsu. And they were both better than me. And for about 3 years, we just met a couple times a week, and I was the new guy, and I was smaller, and I just got crushed mercilessly for 3 years. I don't know if I've ever really beaten those guys. They're just better than me. They started earlier, they're stronger, they're bigger. And that totally made my ego, for the most part, go away. All that cockiness that was there as an early 20-year-old, it went away, it got crushed away. And the interesting thing that happened is after talking or rolling around with those guys and sparring with them, I didn't think I was a very good fighter. But then I went to my first Krav Maga school, and there was some sparring there. And it was totally one of those Karate Kid moments where I was sparring with someone. And I was like, holy shit, I'm actually really good at this. And I actually beat them, and I beat lots of people. I'm not the greatest fighter by any means, but I think having that experience of being crushed and having people around me being so much better than me and being exposed to that for a few years really helped me to become a better man and helped me in lots of different aspects in life. So I guess I kind of went on my own little tangent there about about martial arts.
No, that's cool, man. So let's break some of the things you mentioned down, starting with the meditation. So what did that look like specifically? Where did you meditate? How long was it? And what were you thinking about while you were meditating on death?
So it was pretty informal back then. You know, I didn't have any sort of meditation cushion or meditation bench or anything like that. I didn't even really have a timer. I would just kind of sit on my bed or on my apartment floor, and I would sit how I thought monks would sit. And then I would just think about how I could die in different ways. Maybe I would start the meditation by just kind of focusing on my breath and kind of being in the moment. But then immediately I would start the visualizations. And the interesting thing about this is actually a technique sort of that the Buddha taught. Although the way that he taught it is to, yes, meditate on death, but to do so in a way that reminds you of impermanence, that all things eventually go away. But the interesting thing about that story with the Buddha is he taught this meditation to a big school of monks. And then he left to go teach somewhere else. And then he found out later that that entire school of monks ended up killing themselves. And that's because they just became obsessed with death. And they thought that there was no point in living. And they were meditating in graveyards and just staring at corpses as they were decomposing. So this meditation is one that you need to be careful with, because if you focus on anything too much, then it can cause it to get out of control. So I think what was key for me is not only realizing that I could die and imagining these different ways that it could happen, but then shifting that into how can I live a life that is worth living, knowing that I could die tomorrow, that I could die in the next hour, could die next week. How am I going to live a life that is that satisfies me, that helps people, because that's one of my own goals, and that I will be able to be on my deathbed, wherever that is, and say, you know what, I lived a good life. So I guess that's a very important part that I missed in the very first telling of that. But that is really, really important to know, because this could be a dangerous meditation. You know that the mind can be a dangerous thing if it's not handled in the correct way.
Yeah, I think the first telling of that was rather dark and and gloomy, but it makes a little more sense. But so what specifically are you like thinking about? Because like you said, it can be kind of a dangerous thing when you're thinking about death, you know, especially if you have people listening who may have, you know, some problems with anxiety or have problems with, you know, suicidal thoughts like I had years ago, where these things are like popping up. Like, how do you keep it so it's still safe? And like, what are the thoughts that you're actually having about death? Is this something you recommend people have if they have a fear of dying to get past it? Or is it something that you just did and kind of worked for you?
You know, I, thinking about it in hindsight, it could be a tool that could be useful to other people. I think a better tool that can teach the same sort of thing is a simple mindfulness-based meditation. This is something that has no potential of harm, really, like the other meditation does, because all mindfulness meditation is typically focusing on the feeling of breathing and bringing more of your awareness to the present moment. Because when you have anxiety, usually a lot of your thoughts are focused on the future or catastrophizing what might happen. Or if you have depression, sometimes a lot of your thoughts are focused on the past or past mistakes or how you could do things differently. And so I find that by bringing your awareness more and more to the present moment, you're able to find more peace and to be more in emotional control and to really change your brain's default mode. So instead of focusing so much on anxiety or things that could go wrong, or even focusing so much on death, you're focusing on how to live now. So I think if I were to give my 20-year-old self some advice, it'd be like, hey, don't listen to that samurai in the Bushido book. Instead, try this mindfulness meditation, because it's just as effective. You can learn the same lessons, and also those things apply to many different areas of life, not just death. When it comes to that death meditation specifically, I think it could be helpful in certain situations. But like I said, it'd be better if you had someone guiding you, or at least you took a lot of caution when it comes to doing it. A mindfulness meditation is much, much better. And if you want, I can go into exactly how to do a mindfulness meditation. It's up to you.
Yeah, well, so break that down. What's the better option? What's the mindfulness meditation look like? And how can our listeners use that to get over their fear of death without necessarily having to constantly think about death or dive into the kind of those deep, dark areas of the unknown?
Yeah. So in fact, I'll even come up with like a little gift for your audience if you want. You can either put it on your show notes, or you can go to my website. I'll put it on brilliantside.com/eliteman, and I'll give you a free mindfulness-based meditation, one that I give my clients and ones that I use myself. But basically what you do in order to do a mindfulness meditation is you're just focused on breathing. So you can sit comfortably wherever you want to sit. You know, I typically sit on my couch now. I used to sit on a meditation cushion, but now I just sit on my couch because it's more comfortable. And I keep my eyes open, although some people close them. I keep my hands on my lap, and I just breathe, and I focus on the feeling of breathing. And every now and then, a thought is going to pop up, because that's what the mind does. The mind is constantly producing thoughts, just like the heart is beating all the time. But when those thoughts pop up, I acknowledge them without any form of judgment. They're not good thoughts. They're not bad thoughts. They're just thoughts. And then I allow them just to drift away. And then I bring my focus back to the feeling of breathing. And that whole process of trying to focus on my feeling of breathing, getting distracted by thoughts, realizing I'm being distracted by thoughts, and then bringing it back to the focus of the breath. That whole thing will take place dozens of times throughout a meditation session. And that's okay. That's what's supposed to happen. A lot of people think that meditating means your mind is going to be completely empty and very peaceful. And that's not necessarily the case. Meditation is a way to study your own mind, figure out how it works, and to also train your mind to be more and more in the present moment. So you're not as catastrophizing things in the future or ruminating about mistakes from the past. You're just focused on the present moment where you can actually make changes and you have a lot more power and control. And when it comes to meditation, I recommend people meditate for between 10 and 20 minutes a day. You can set a timer. You can get one of those apps online really easily. And just set a timer and meditate. But I guess this meditation I'm going to give you or give your audience, it's a 15-minute meditation, so it's really easy to do. It teaches you the process, and it makes it super easy.
Okay, cool, man. Yeah, so definitely I'll put that in the show notes as well, or guys could just head on right over to the brilliantside.com/eliteman. Either way works. Benjamin, can you talk quickly about the Stoicism philosophy and kind of how that's helped you in overcoming your fears as well? Like, what is the, I mean, you hear that all the time, especially, you know, in a lot of podcasts these days, a lot of different blogs are talking about it. What is it about Stoicism that helps people get over their fears, and how did it apply to you?
Yeah, so Stoicism, there's many different leaders in Stoicism. I prefer Marcus Aurelius, who was kind of a philosopher king, and Stoicism is the basis of modern day cognitive behavioral therapy. And all Stoicism really is it's kind of discovering a truth about a situation and relentlessly applying that to your life and figuring out how your mind works and also noticing those false beliefs you might have. Like a classic sort of Stoic example is you might be really concerned about, strangers in public. You might have social anxiety because you're worried that people are thinking that you look weird or that you're ugly or that you're awkward or whatever it is. But you can start to analyze that thought process. And one of the first things you can realize is, hey, are people actually thinking those thoughts about me? And there's no way to know that if they are or not. But you can probably notice that most people aren't thinking about you at all. They're pretty self-absorbed. Human beings in general are self-absorbed. And so kind of applying these different truths that you discover through your own personal insights and applying them to your life, changing those different patterns, that way eventually your life becomes easier and easier. And that's why it's really good for things like anxiety or any sort of mindset-based problem. You can apply some of these different truths that you can learn from people like Marcus Aurelius or Epictetus or Seneca, these different books that are out there in the Stoic field, and apply the ideas that work to you that resonate with you and start changing those patterns in your life. And the reason I like Stoicism so much is I feel like it took everything that was in my brain that I knew to be true and it put it down on paper. And so I think that's why I really love Marcus Aurelius, because he wrote down everything that I wanted in my head. And he's a very real person. Being a Stoic doesn't mean that you are perfect in any way or that your mind is perfect. It's really just reminding yourself again and again, hey, this is the truth of this situation. You don't have to be anxious about X, Y, Z. You don't have to be fearful about this. This is the truth. This is the truth. And that's what I really think philosophy is all about, finding a better way to live.
Do you see any differences between Stoicism and, say, the philosophy of Buddhism?
Yes, there definitely are. I think that Buddhism, especially kind of Zen Buddhism, deals with more how the universe works and some of the deeper truths, whereas Stoicism is really mainly concerned with societal truths and how to live better in society. I think that it's easier at first to apply some of the Stoic principles because they're usually about life and how you're living it right now. Whereas some of the Zen Buddhist stuff is definitely applicable, and I think it can definitely solve problems, but you have to think a little bit deeper and you have to really work to apply it to your life. Like the idea of impermanence, for example, which is a pretty classic Buddhist principle. The things that are always changing and nothing remains the same. That's the principle that's there, but you have to work to apply that to your life to realize that, hey, my fiance that I love very much, she's eventually going to die. That's an impermanent situation. Or that this job I have might change, or that, that not all changes are bad either. The food that I just ate is changing in my stomach and I'm able to digest it and it's going to turn into energy. So realizing that change is not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just always happening. And so I guess that's kind of the difference. Stoicism is more applicable in the day-to-day life at first, but Zen Buddhism is also applicable, but you have to work a little bit harder. And there are different tools that Buddhism kind of promotes, like meditation, which helps with that process.
How do you become okay with like the idea of change and that, you know, think we're all going to die, or, you know, nothing lasts forever. Your girlfriend will be gone one day. Your family will be, your parents will be gone. Your best friends will be gone. Like, how do you deal with those realisms, those truths that can be so painful or hurtful if you think about them, and, you know, obviously terrifying?
Yeah, the way that I deal with them is I feel it. Like, I allow myself to feel sad. If I think about my girlfriend dying or my family dying, it's okay to be sad about things. Zen Buddhism doesn't mean that you have no emotions or anything like that. It means that you experience all of the emotions, and to realize that even that emotion of sadness you're feeling, that too is impermanent and that too will eventually go away. And I view a lot of these different concepts, whether they be Bushido concepts or Stoic concepts or Buddhism concepts or whatever it might be, they're just reminders. And for me in life, I constantly have to remind myself of these things again and again and again. There's very little in life, or actually really nothing in life, that is a permanent one-time fix that just solves things forever. Even hypnosis, you know, it doesn't solve things forever necessarily. Things have to be maintained. Habits need momentum. And change is always happening. So it really matters if you're moving towards something that's good, that's helpful towards you, or if you're drifting towards something that's maybe not helpful. And so those constant reminders, reminding myself a lot by reading different texts or meditation, that's kind of what helps me. I don't know if you found anything specific that has helped you in reminding yourself about some of these different things you talk about.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a ton of things. I'm a big Eckhart Tolle fan as well.
And, oh, yeah.
Living in the power of now and all that stuff, just kind of embracing. And over the years, I've learned to – there was a technique many years ago that I came across. Panic Away was the ebook, and was a guy by the name of Joe Barry. Mm-hmm. And the technique was very simple, but it was facing your fears head on and not being scared of – things that come. So if I was getting a panic attack before, you know, finding this technique, this process, I would, you know, try to hide from it or pretend like it wasn't happening. And it was a hit or miss type of thing. You know, every once in a while the panic would go away on its own. But a lot of the time it wouldn't stop. It would get worse. The anxiety would get worse. The panic, mm-hmm. the fears would get worse. When I learned this technique of actually just calling it out and literally like going through my body and calling out all the sensations of fears and, you know, the butterflies in the stomach, the sweaty palms, the pounding chest, like the, you know, all the sensations of a panic attack. When I literally went down and called them all out and kind of exposed them to the light and tackled them head on, they all went away. Within a couple of minutes, the panic attack would go away. And I actually used the same technique later on to get over my fear of riding roller coasters. For many years, I'd been scared to ride roller coasters. I'd always get sick at the end of them. I'd be terrified throughout the entire ride. But I used this same technique, this process of getting on roller coasters. I would get on with a buddy of mine, and we'd just start yelling and swearing and screaming and putting our hands up and just acting like fools. But throughout the entire ride, throughout the process of riding these roller coasters, and we'd go on the craziest ones, the fastest ones, the biggest ones, we actually enjoyed it because we are living in the moment and embracing these fears and tackling them essentially head on.
Yeah, that's a a wonderful technique. It reminds me a little bit of my kind of my death meditation in a way. You know, facing the fears rather than just trying to avoid them, or even just sort of naming things can be really, really interesting. Like, just to digress a little bit, there's a psychologist in the University of San Diego, I believe, and he helped people with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm-hmm. And he had these two different groups with people with OCD. And in the scientific study he did, he gave one group some medication that typically helps with OCD. And this other group, he taught this four-step mental protocol. And the protocol was really simple. The first thing was to recognize kind of that you were having a compulsive thought. The second thing, and really important, was to remind yourself that that thought is not you. It's just your brain, or it's just a sensation in some way. And that gives you distance between yourself and whatever you're feeling. And then the third step was to redirect your energy towards something else. And then the last step was to eventually kind of reevaluate the whole process. But the reason I bring that up is because that's sort of what you did by analyzing these different parts of yourself when you're having a panic attack and kind of calling it out by name. It kind of took away the power of the panic attack, or at least it seems like that happened. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's dead on, man.
That's awesome. So it's kind of cool how all these different things we're discovering about the brain, they all kind of match up from all these different areas, I think.
Yeah, totally. I love that too. Like, your thought is not actually you. It's just it's hard to really get a grasp of how it works, but really your thoughts aren't you. Like, you are you as, you know, your soul, your being, but your mind, I mean, it's kind of separate. Eckhart Tolle actually talks about that a lot in the Power of Now, but it's a fascinating topic as well.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not enlightened like any of those guys. I struggle through life just like anyone. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's possible, well, maybe it is, to just be able to live separate from your mind, but I've not found that to be the case. But I think it is something to aim for, or at least to be able to kind of observe your mind and figure out how it works, which is why I talk about meditation a lot, because I feel like it is the best tool to figure out how your mind works, so you aren't as ambushed all the time throughout the day by different thoughts your mind might have.
Yeah, totally, man. And, you know, the more research that comes out on meditation just kind of proves the efficacy of it. And more and more, it's just getting more and more popular for a reason, I think, because, you know, it is so effective. And so many people are, you know, they obviously love what it does for them. And, you know, again, the research is coming out. It helps lower stress. It helps give you more energy, helps you clearer thinking, all that type of thing. So, I'm really starting to get more and more into meditation myself, and I love guys who are, you know, on the forefront of it.
Yeah, eventually on my website, I want to develop a course or some sort of maybe even a free thing about my 8-week challenge, which is how I started meditating. Is I read a scientific study like 6 years ago or something like that, that they had people meditate for 8 weeks. And over the course of 8 weeks, they saw that different areas of the brain changed through meditation, like the hippocampus, the left temporoparietal junction, the cerebellum, even the amygdala, all these different areas of the brains started changing because of the meditation. And so I decided to meditate for 8 weeks, just like the study recommended. And, you know, I didn't notice anything drastic at first. For the first 4 or 5, even 6 weeks, you know, I felt kind of bored during meditation. I felt like it was a waste of time. But at about week 6, 7, 8, you know, I had some pretty amazing things happen. You know, I had a moment where my mind just stopped talking, where my mind actually was quiet for a little while. It didn't last very long. It lasted for about 60 seconds. And then I instantly thought, like, holy crap, my mind's not thinking anymore, which is a thought, of course. But for me, that was kind of my turning point. I realized, wow, there is something to this meditation, but it's one of those things that you just have to do consistently, and you have to do it for a little bit of a longer time. And I think the reason that a lot of people struggle with it is you have to get through that little doldrum of the weeks 4, 5, 5.5, 6, where you haven't noticed a lot of the changes yet, and you're quote unquote wasting time doing this every day. You just have to push past that. So you can notice all the benefits at those later times.
Yeah. And you can do this too. Like you, I think you mentioned earlier, like at any time, you don't need a specific, you don't need any equipment. You could do it on your bed. You could do it on your floor. Do you use like calming, soothing type music, or are you kind of just in a quiet room by yourself for 15, 20 minutes? Is that the setup?
Yeah, I typically just meditate in silence by staring at a wall usually. And that's because I learned to do that at a Buddhist temple and they told me that's how you meditate. So that's how I do it now. But you can do it with meditation music. You can do it with guided meditations too, although some people get addicted to those guided meditations. I recommend using those guided meditations like training wheels, that as soon as you kind of get the process and you kind of know how to do it in your mind, then you kind of turn off the guided meditations. You can still have your peaceful music, but then just go through the process of bringing your mind back to your breath again and again with no one guiding you. And that's the most important thing about meditation, I think.
And just kind of wrapping things up in a moment, what has the martial arts played in your ability to overcome some of these fears in your life? Like, how has that shaped you, changed your sort of mindset on not only death, but just fears in general and kind of being more confident and as a man?
Yeah, I think that martial arts is one of those things that I got into them when I was a high school kid, and because someone punched me in the stomach and it really hurt and I couldn't defend myself. But that's why I started. But now that I've been doing it for so long, like I said, it's really helped me control my ego. But now it's really cool, because when you walk into a room and you know that you're the most dangerous person there hand to hand, I mean, that's it gives you a sense of confidence that nothing else I've noticed really does. And maybe that's just me and how I think and things like that. But it really, knowing that you can handle yourself if things go badly, I think is really important, especially for a man. Because people might be looking to you in an emergency situation. And I mean, a whole big area of martial arts is also avoiding those potentially dangerous situations before they even start. But you don't have to train for years and years and years like I have, you know. You can train for, I don't know, 6 months to a year, and you can know a lot more than 90% of the population, which can help if there is an altercation. And for me now, I view fighting as something that is relaxing, is really fun. I hope I never get into a real fight. And it's just something that is fun for me now. I guess I think of it a lot differently than the Benjamin that got started just as a kid, where I wanted to be able to beat up the bully. Now I would rather talk to the bully or do something like that. But I think being able to defend myself allows me to talk to the bully. If that makes sense.
It just gives you that confidence that, you know, if something goes down, you can handle yourself. And I've been around martial arts too for the past decade or so. And it's funny, because the toughest guys in the gym, the baddest, you know, dudes that go to the boxing gym or the MMA gym, those are typically not the loudest guys in the room. And they're also usually the most humble. And it's cool, man, because it changes you in a way. Like, you obviously were humbled when you were boxing that, you know, boxer that was better than you, and, you know, wrestling around, grappling with a jiu-jitsu expert there who was, you know, kicking your ass. Those guys humbled you, and they, I'm sure, have been also humbled by other guys who are better than them. So it changes kind of your perspective on things. It also makes you appreciate things. But at the same time, it gives you confidence to know that, like you said, if something goes down, you have the ability to defend yourself. But it also, it makes you grateful for kind of what you have, and gives you an appreciation, respect for other people.
Yeah, you are totally right about the people that are really good at fighting. They tend to not have much of an ego, or they tend to be really kind. And that's usually because they have to stick through that beginning period of just being crushed all the time. It was always fun when I was at that MMA gym, when some big guy would come in with lots of muscles and an attitude. And then someone like me that was much smaller, I like weighed like 155 pounds, was able to beat them. And they were using all of their strength and doing things in a slightly different way, using jiu-jitsu and different leverage techniques. I was able to beat them. And so those people that stuck around through that, those are the people that had to reevaluate their ego and how they were viewing themselves, and they became better people. But a lot of those guys, they got smashed and they said, this is bullshit. And then they just left and they never came back.
Yeah, I've seen many of those guys as well come and go throughout the years. Benjamin, man, it's been an awesome interview. I had an absolute blast just shooting the shit with you about hypnosis, NLP, stoicism, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, a ton of stuff, man. Really great interview, great chat. Is there any last send-off message you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience before we wrap things up, and then also a place you'd like to send our listeners to check out more about you?
Yeah, Basically, the only thing I'd like to say is if you're interested in other stuff I'm doing, you can check out the Shut Up Brain podcast. You can go to shutupbrainpodcast.com or go to my website, Brilliant Side. But I think by listening to either my podcast or Justin's podcast, just improving yourself, kind of thinking about some of these tough topics, that's what you want to do. And that's what leads to improving your life. Step by step. There's going to be no perfection, but you can get better each and every day. And so, and then I'll also, like I said, I'll give Justin that link to that mindfulness meditation. So I recommend doing meditation every day. It's something that top performers do. It's something that I've been doing that is really helpful. And this meditation I'll give you is something that tells you exactly what you need to do with your mind in order to make it happen in a very easy way.
Cool, man. Benjamin, thanks again for coming on, brother. I really do appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? If not, check your pulse right now, because there is something seriously wrong with you. I say this all the time, guys, but seriously, the Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the number one community for connecting with men, connecting with great men. We've had thousands of guys now join the group and share ideas every single day on becoming the elite and best men we can be. So join the group right now by going to elitemanmastermind.com. If for some reason you haven't joined yet and request to join the group, it is a private group, which means you do have to request, but I will add you in within just a few hours after your request. Trust me, you are going to love this group and absolutely love being a part of the Elite Man Mastermind. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.